Good evening, Yellow Dogs. Nice to sit with you tonight. I'm going to talk about something really great tonight. It's called, Who Are We? No, really, really, who are we? So, as a Yellow Dog Sangha member, we're just a group of people coming together every Monday evening, and we were just wanting to wake up to the truths about our lives and truths about ourselves and, you know, the truth. But even today, the truth of what is happening in our country is not easily found. But we're also reminded in meditation that things are not as they appear. So how confusing. We're confused. So we find we have to search for the truth of what this is all about, what we're all about. And certainly with our country being turned upside down, again, we have to search for the truth. But being quiet and still brings up us a perspective. It's a perspective in the sense that we are interested in what's going on inside of us. We've always been interested in the outside, but now there's more, we have more interest of what's happening inside. And as you know, it's not what we think at all. So let's talk about another perspective. Let's pretend that we have a big microscope over us tonight, over this whole room and everything in it. What would it look like? Well, science tells us each person would vanish as an individual form. We'd see shimmering field of trillions of cells and red blood cells, like tiny floating discs, white cells moving with intent. Skin cells packed together, constantly dying and being replaced. We would see that we are all part of a vast living ecosystem. It would be impossible to tell where one person ended and another one began. Another perspective. Zoom in closer. And everything that looks solid becomes mostly empty space. Isn't that interesting? We'd see atoms vibrating in constant motion, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, all the building blocks of life. And the boundaries between people and air blur completely. Now, let's go to the subatomic level. We can even go deeper still. Then at this level, atoms dissolve into energy fields. Electrons are whirling, quantum probabilities are shimmering in and out of existence. There's no solidity, no separateness, just patterns of energy and interacting. So really, under a microscope, a room full of people becomes a field of independent processes. no fixed selves, only movement, exchange, and relationships. What we call a person is a temporary arrangement of energy and matter. So we're briefly, because we know all things are going to end, we're briefly taking form, breathing together, and then we're going to dissolve back into the same vast field. So that's a bit to take in for the rational mind. Pretty daggum scary. Well, we know from our teachers that we have to understand what a paradox is. And as you know, a paradox is something that seems contradictory or impossible at first, but it reveals a deeper truth. So really, that's what meditation can give all of us, is giving all of us another perspective, a deeper truth that sets us free, and we become happier quite naturally. We don't have to play at being happy. It's there. It's within us. We have happy Buddha natures. So meditation unlocks these doors of confusion and of paradoxes. And again, we know things are not as they appear. So how are we living with all this information? Because everyone is privy to that information. Well, we're living our lives as if there was a solid, fixed me. And really nothing's wrong with that, except it's not true. At the very center of everything we experience, there's no fixed me. And we're taught from childhood to say and to identify ourselves with I, me, and mine. And then we're encouraged to build around that sense of self a person. Who am I? Well, I'm Anita. And if you try to tell me that that's not who I am before I'm ready to hear it, I've been offended many times because Randy at the beginning used to say, Anita, you're not your body. Stop, I'd say. Randy, stop saying that to me. Because it was just so unbelievable. And I wasn't ready to hear it. So it did offend me. So we have to be ready to hear a lot of the teachings that the Buddha gave. But they're so, so important. Otherwise, we're just sitting on our nests like hens. And the same old, same old. We have to be ready to hear what we don't particularly want to hear. But this sense of self we have in all of us is important to get to know. And we all know it as ego, and we've been through the years of our education and just life, we pretty well know what ego is. We've been taught a bit about the ego. So we all have egos, and again, absolutely nothing's wrong with egos. But egos don't bring us to the truth of who we are. These stories that we have kept going for ages, we tell ourselves become that's who we are. So that's the biggest breakthrough at the beginning, and still sounds somewhat hard to believe. But we have Buddha nature. And this Buddha nature within us is in all of us. And it is covered. How is it covered? Well, it's covered by all the things that we add to any given moment. And again, that sounds so far out, but we have to see it for ourselves. And the Buddha invites us to see that this self is not fixed. Then he teaches us how we can see that for ourselves. Because he says it's not blind faith. What he teaches, we have to directly experience before it even holds any truth for us. And so there's nothing wrong with our sense of self or our ego. But we also know that the ego is constantly being created. And we create it through our thoughts, emotions, and reactions. And if you meditate long enough, we do it long enough, we begin to see it for ourselves. All of this phenomena, if this is the first time you've heard it, comes to us. And we begin a journey because we're open to it. And we begin to start trying to see these things, not heavy on the try, but trying to see these things through being quiet and still. So when someone praises us, we feel good. Nothing's wrong with that either. And when someone criticizes us, then, you know, that brings up some other kind of emotions. But these are not truths, but they're just momentary constructions. Just something happening in any given moment. And they arise and they fade like all other things that we experience. Like our thoughts, like our, you know, our stories. Everything arises and falls away. All of the things that are conditioned. So if we don't keep them going by adding unnecessary dialogue to them, we begin to recognize and allow for ourselves what actually is going on. And we get a bit closer to who we really are. And the things we are experiencing are real under the umbrella of being a human being. But what keeps it from being real is it's going to go away. And my mind and body is already going away. I'm not quite ready, but, you know, no one asked me. So we begin our path of freedom. So how do we create this sense of self? Well, it's what we identify with by clinging to past experiences and saying, okay, this is me. This happened, this must be me. This thing happened, okay, I'll integrate it into who I am. And so we start clinging to passing experiences and we get settled with, that's me. And it's useful in a society. Again, nothing's wrong with any of these things. But our perspective of them will shift greatly when we ask for the truth and we are quiet and still. So we identify with our body, our roles, our opinions, our history. But all of it will go away. And it changes. Every moment is a new moment. Again, a paradox. Doesn't seem that way, does it? Every moment is fresh. That is how fast everything is changing. So, who were we 10 years ago? Well, 20 years ago, I was a principal. Thank goodness I'm not a principal anymore. And today, well, I'm a meditation teacher. So, these identifications come and go. And they're replaced constantly by new experiences, new understanding, new conditionings, new conditions. The only constant is that awareness, being here in the present moment. That's the only truth there is in the present moment. And so we find that out as we look at where we are distracted from this mind and body. And nothing's wrong with it, because that's part of being a human being, but that's not the complete story. Rodney Smith, one of our teachers, says, we are constantly creating a self that then needs to be managed. Boy, my sense of self certainly needs to be managed, monitored. But being a Dharma teacher is different than being a principal. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I did feel like I was kind of getting out of jail, and thought at first, you know, being in charge was something really, really liked at the beginning. But it didn't take long for the ego to come in, to identification with it, to feel the power, to do it wrong. I did it right some of the time, but I think it was probably 50-50. Maybe not even that, even. So I'm not discounting how important self-care is, but we live in reaction to the image of ourselves. Rather than, and we have this choice in direct contact with life. How do we directly contact life? By just being here. And we've practiced so long about being in the mind, conceptualizing ourselves in life, that it's a struggle to begin with. But as we practice, we begin to see for ourselves. And remember, it's a practice. So none of this is going to unfold until practice is set. We become more in contact with not only ourselves, the outside and the inside, but we begin to see that things are fleeting faster than we've ever allowed us to see it. And that has an impact, because it's a deep teaching, has a big impact on our lives when we see that truth. So how do we know that we are creating this sense of self? Well, meditation is our laboratory for this discovery. I'm sure there's others, but this one has been used for over 2,600 years. And when we sit quietly and we watch the mind, we can observe this process of self-making. It's there, not hidden, it's there. But again, we have to be in the right place doing the right thing in order for that perspective to reveal itself. So we watch the mind. And the mind, and through watching and knowing the nature of the mind, we observe the process of self-making. A thought arises, oh, I'm doing this wrong, or I feel peaceful. And in that moment, the I wants to attach to the experience, even though truthful is just an experience. Many, many experiences that we're going to have from now on until our last breath. They're just experiences. But if we watch carefully, we can see the experience happening on its own. And again, this is a huge breakthrough. We begin to see what we do to the present moment. The only place we can find peace. Now that's quite a statement. The only place we will ever find peace is within. But we begin to see that nature has a life of its own, and we interfere with it. We don't mean to interfere with it, but we just don't know. And so as we learn not to interfere in it, we see what a relief. What a relief it is to go through life in such a relaxed way instead of making issues and opinions about everything. It's optional. We don't have to do that, but we're conditioned that way. So awareness, life, nature, just simply, we just have to simply know what arises in any given moment. But we're human beings, so we forget. That's like I said last two weeks ago. We forget, then we remember. We remember, then we forget. And that's okay. That's the way of things. So, in knowing that, then that's where we point ourselves to, how do we remember? And we begin to see that insight into the truth of what actually is happening is not only freeing, but it's insightful. It's a happier place, a much, much, much happier place. But we have to directly experience it, because isn't it easy to say it? But it means nothing until we can directly experience it. And then you've got the whole system, the whole body, the mind, body, everything within this system pointing ourselves towards the truth. So we're just noticing and allowing, noticing and allowing. As many times as we can during the day, regardless of what we're doing. And we're noticing our bodies. Notice our breathing. We hear sounds again, thoughts passing through, all without claiming ownership. It's just phenomena. Isn't that such a relief? It's just phenomenal. Oh, yeah, but you don't know my thoughts. Yeah, I do. And it doesn't matter, because we don't know from where thoughts come and we don't know where they go. So we don't identify with thoughts any more than we do our emotions and our likes and our dislikes. It's just part of being a human being. So here we are. All that's happening is we are seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, thinking, and feeling as life goes by. And so in everyday life, when we begin to bring that into our lives and our consciousness, our practice is established every day. Life is our practice. I used to think, no, it's only when I sit on my cushion or only if I... No. With enough practice, it becomes quite evident that the teachings are going to come to us daily. But are we going to be awake to them? Sometimes. But sometimes we forget. And that's why a mindfulness meditation practice, that's why it's so important, because it's a readiness. It gets us ready for that. So notice how quickly the mind can say, I like this, I don't like that, I'm right, you're wrong. Each of those is a moment of self-construction. Because it's all okay, all of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But again, it's our perspective of it. There's no wisdom. We have not touched the wisdom of the good, the bad, and the ugly. But it's there. The truth is there. So the practice is not to get rid of the self, but to see through it, to recognize what we call I is just a collection of conditions. So what do we do now? Well, the first thing we do is stop taking ourselves so personally. I'm really talking to myself about that. Because the nature, the heart, naturally opens. It's been doing that, but it just comes back on. So we live more lightly. There's more humor and compassion because when we get closer to the truth of who we are or the truth of what life is all about, it's not heavy or hard. It's not heavy or hard. No. It's delightful. A Tibetan teacher wrote a book that said, and I believe him, you know, just because I know his history, it's falling in love with the world. Gosh, that got my attention. What do you mean falling in love with the world? How can you fall in love with the world? Well, he knows. He knows the answer to that question. So let me move along. So Mary Oliver says, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one and wild, precious life? So the Buddha might respond, we begin to notice how we create ourselves moment by moment. And in that seeing, it is easy to let it go. It's easier to let the thoughts go. It's easier to let that identification go. It's easy. It's quite natural. Natural. Why so natural? Because it's nature. We're back much more in line with nature than we are when we're locked in who we think we are. So I'll stop with Kalu Rinpoche, who says it so well. He says, we live in illusion in the appearance of things. There is a reality. We are that reality. When you understand this, when you understand this, you see that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That is all. So thank you for being good listeners. Thank you for being here. And now we open it up to you.